Hi, everybody. It's 1 o'clock. It's Monday. It's time for Pirkei Avot, the history and Hashkafa. Although this week it's going to be a little bit more Hashkafa than history. I hope everybody's okay. If you're in Israel, I hope you're keeping cool because it's absolutely boiling outside. I'm looking up here in the hills of Judea. I'm looking at my computer. It says 88 degrees outside. That's like 32 centigrade or something like that. And it's I'm only going to extrapolate as to what it is, what it possibly could be on the coast, considering the fact that the humidity is really, 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 really heavy. Anyways, I have a sad duty today. I would like a dear friend of mine, an older friend. Passed away yesterday, and I would like to dedicate the shiur today to his memory. His name was Rabbi Reuven Bulka, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was a rabbi in Ottawa. He was really the rabbi in Ottawa, and they called him Canada's rabbi. He was a rav in his shul, Machzik Yadas, in Ottawa for at least 40 years, and maybe even 50. And he was a truly remarkable person. He was Talmud Chacham. He was a tremendous mensch, a person of incredible sense of humor and yet amazing sensitivity and ethical probity. He cared about, he basically cared about people in a way that was really quite quite amazing and quite remarkable and quite inspiring. And maybe it's not, as we'll see with the Mishnah for today, maybe it's not that, it's hard for me. You know? I was very, very fond of him. We worked together on a project in which I'm very proud. For 5 years, he was the chairman, I was the executive chairman of a thing called the Orthodox Roundtable, which tried to relate to contemporary issues, and we were prescient in many ways. And he was a person who brought up the issues because he wants to make life better for people. And he advanced logotherapy, Frankl's logotherapy, in a Jewish context. He just was a very beloved person. And his levaya was yesterday in New York, and will be the interment will be today in this evening in Beit Shemesh. And anyways, Le'ilu Nishmat Rav Reuven Pinchas Ben Chaim Yaakov, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. The Mishnah that we're going to discuss actually is it's really, really hard to understand. I don't know how else to put it. The Mishnah, and we don't even know who said it. It's in the context of a whole series of he said, he said. The scholars are not really clear who to whom to attribute the Mishnah, but the Mishnah stands on its own feet. Doesn't matter, really matter who said it. Hu haya omer, whoever it was. Aseh ritzono kiritzoncha. Kedeshi aseh ritzoncha kiritzono. Batel ritzoncha mipnei ritzono. Kedeshi batel ritzono chirim mipnei ritzoncha. Make his will as your will. Identify his will with your will, in order that he should make his will like your will. Alternatively, a negative way of putting it, sort of put aside or cancel your desires or your will in the face of his, so that he will cancel the desires of others on you, towards you. It's a very, what are we talking about? So it's interesting. I mean, I guess it says something about who I am. I immediately assumed that Ritzono, we're talking about sort of like an unnamed his will. It must be with a capital H and a capital W. It must be talking about God. And then I take a look, and not so posh, not so clear. Many of the commentators think, no, the point of Pirkei Avot is not just to guide the interactions between man and God, but to guide the interactions between man and his fellow man, between people. So if that's the case, so let's start with that. And there are others who also say that the person we're talking about is God. So we're going to start with people, And then we'll talk about God. So, the line of commentaries that assumes that we're talking about the interaction between two people would have it read as follows: Aseh Ritzono Kirtzoncha. When you find a friend of yours or somebody that you care about needs something, do it altruistically. Don't do it because don't do it because you might get something out of it. Don't do it because you want to gain points with that person. That's not the reason to do it. Do it because it's the right thing, and do it because it's somebody you care about, and that's what they need. Try to climb into their head and say, okay. In fact, don't even project what you think they need on them. Ask them. Aseh Ritzono Kirtzoncha. Take a look. Find out what the person needs. Talk to them. Get past. It's very hard. It requires intimacy, right? But get past what your own projections are, and ask, what do you need? And I'll do it. And it doesn't matter to me what it costs. It doesn't matter to me what that it might be get me out of my my comfort zone. The affection between us requires that I be selfless here. And why do you do that? Kadeshi Aseh Ritzoncha B'Tzonah, because you want. It's not a quid pro quo. A really honest relationship is a relationship in which two people look at each other in the eye and they understand who they are. In fact, when I was a kid, I remember in college there was a poem. I don't remember the whole poem, but one of the lines was, "You are you and I am I." That, right, we respect each other for who we are, and therefore I want on your terms to help you. Just because you are you. And I expected the same thing. I expect the same kind of reaction. I expect the same kind of response. I expect the same kind of attitude, the same kind of mutual respect as you do. That's sine qua non of a decent, respectful relationship in a society. One of the seriously deficient aspects of contemporary culture. Yeah, I know, I go on and on about contemporary culture here, but it's because it's true. One of the things that is seriously wrong with us is that we all sort of live in this solipsistic universe, in meaning that we're surrounded very often by people who agree with us, and that's normal. You know, you make friends with people who are like-minded. You have, as we talked about friendship a few months ago, you want a chaver ladea, as the Rambam says. A person you share values with, but not always, and no two people are identical. But part of the problem is that as a result of our being surrounded by ourselves and being our heads too much and being on social media too much, here we are on Facebook, we get this idea that we live in an echo chamber, and we think everybody thinks like us. And as a result, when somebody doesn't think like us, we can't process. We don't know how to process that. So you can't mean that, or we block them because I can't tolerate somebody to deviate from me. Now, that's a very, very bad that's a very, very bad quality. That's a very, very bad moral characteristic. You have to respect other people for who they are and what they believe in. And you might want to disagree with them. You might want to argue with them. But you argue with them based on the idea that they are sincere and that they have principled ideals with which you have to interact. There's no other way to do this. Aseh Ritzono Kirtzoncha, treat your desires and your outlook, or treat his as like yours, his or she, her, his or hers, the same way. You know, as you just say, you expect respect for yours. You should have for yours, and that's how people should interact. It's contemporary society, as I said, we think that everybody believes in. We think that everybody thinks like us, and therefore can't tolerate the idea that there might be value systems that are different than ours. A friend of mine, Professor Richard Landis, was at Boston University for many years, calls this cognitive egocentrism, which means that everybody must think like me. And therefore, if somebody doesn't think like me, it must be that there's something wrong with either there's something that's wrong with them, something wrong with them, notice, or they don't really mean it. Now, this can be very dangerous. When people from two different cultures interact and they genuinely have different value systems, then this can lead to serious misreadings of the other person and can even be dangerous. I'm not going to go into the dangerous part. I'll give you an example. There are Judaism in the late 20th and the 21st century is trying to deal with postmodern. I know they don't like the word postmodern, but contemporary, cultural, liberal, progressive, whatever values. And there are certain points. There are certain points at which those two, and there were certain overlaps and so on, but there are certain points at which those two cultures, those two civilizations just don't, they're absolutely opposed one to the other. Okay, I'll give you an example. There are three, I think I've mentioned this here. There are three areas where this sort of absolute contradiction comes to bear. One is who owns one's life, who owns one's body, and who owns one's reputation. The question of who owns one's life, modern society says, the person who's born owns their life. They can do whatever they want. They want to commit suicide, fuck a shot. Maybe it's not a good idea, but you own my life is mine, and you can't tell me anything. The Torah comes and says, no, you don't own your life. Suicide is forbidden. Doing something which is dangerous is forbidden. Something which endangers your life, you're not allowed to do, because God will, in fact, punish you after 120 for doing that. Because you don't own your life. Your life, your soul, is a gift from God. So that's, so those are two really polar opposites. And when two groups come together trying to decide on issues like euthanasia and all kinds of other things in a Jewish state, there's going to be a common language on those questions. So the question is, yaseh ritzoncha ki ritzono, if you want to be able to figure out how two groups who hold each of those polar opposites are going to deal with these things, the answer's got to be that you have to recognize the fact that they mean their position is an integrated and principled one, and so is ours, and somehow figure out if it's possible to find a common ground. Similarly, body. Who owns your body? So the progressive world says, I own my body. My body is myself. I can do whatever I want to it. It's mine. And the Torah says, no. The Torah says, no. That body was given to you by God. You're not allowed to hurt yourself under any circumstances. No drugs. Okay, let's not talk about tattoos. That's another story. No drugs. The abortion issue is to a significant degree fashioned on that issue. And never mind the fact that, as opposed to the modern contention that a person can do in the comfort of their home whatever they want, the Torah comes and says, no, you can't do what you want. Now, I'm not saying that the government should go snoop on what people do in houses, but I'm trying to say that on a principle decision, it's a totally different outlook. So the first way to be able to come into any kind of dialogue with a person who's different is to asei ritzon chaki ritzono. In other words, accept the fact, treat what they want and what you want as if, the same way you want to be treated, you should treat others. So altruism on the one hand, and mutual respect and deference on the other. Now, is just another way of saying that forego your own ego when you want to do something for somebody else. And so that others will, in fact, see that that's the proper way to act and prepare and make for a better society. It's very hard to do that. It's very hard for us to get out of our own heads. But this is really, really important if we are ever going to be able to reach a mutual understanding on all kinds of issues. And it's an important thing to integrate in our own life. What are we going to do? We're not going to have friends because they don't agree with us 100%. Maybe there are points at which, but I've seen one of the with the lack of this Mishnah being put into contact, into effect in the past, say, 5-6 years, it's not true. Thank God it's not true so much in Israel, to the best of my knowledge. But I've been told by friends in the States that there are couples who have divorced over politics. Hello? Really? That's where it comes down to? A Democrat can't marry a Republican? I don't know. I mean, my father voted for Nixon in 1960. My mother voted for Kennedy. That till my father died, they were very happily married. I mean, what? I don't understand it. But I can see where that kind of extreme could come out of lack of cognizance and lack of implementation of this mission. Okay, so that's one way of. That's one way of looking at this Mishnah. Oh, I wanted to add one more thing, and it may not fit the words, but it's such an important concept that I can't not mention it. Aser ritzono kirtzoncha. What that person needs, try to give them. I think indicates also a certain degree of identification and empathy. What I derive personally from this, I mean, it may very well be that it's not the simple meaning of the Mishnah, but what I derive from this is the idea that if you find a person who is in a position wherein you found yourself not long before, or maybe long before, it doesn't matter, then you should take your experience and proactively help them. You've been there, so help them through. It's called pay it forward. And you take the initiative to make sure that the other person doesn't have to go through what you do, or you can provide something which maybe was lacking to you or someone did for you. Identification with somebody else's experience, with your experience and their experience, leads you to do a selfless and altruistic act. And the only reward you get is the satisfaction, which is a tremendous thing. I'll give you an example. Academic life, despite the fact that most people think it's, it's a cinch, is not easy. It can be a terrarium at best. And the way that I was able to get through is because there were good people along the way who helped me. Advice, whatever is required. And I was told by, at one specific time, a dear friend of mine, I'll mention who he is, Rabbi Professor Bencion Rosenfeld, said to me, he did me a favor, he did me a huge favor once, and he said, don't pay me back, don't give me a gift, don't thank me, nothing, do for somebody else, help other people. And so, as a result, whenever I'm asked to sit on promotion committees or to judge a doctorate or whatever, but you can beg off. You can always say, I'm too busy. I never beg off. I never say no. Now, maybe I overdo it, but I know how much it meant to me to have other people do for me. Asei ritzono kirtzoncha. Remember, see what they're going through and try to help them through and make it a little painful. And then if it was successful, you say to them, don't thank me, pay it forward. So I think that's another I think that's another very critical part of this Mishnah. Now that's if the Mishnah is talking about interpersonal relations. However, it's also very likely that the Mishnah is not talking about interpersonal relations. The Mishnah is talking about the interaction between man and God. Here, if that's the pshat, if that's the meaning of the Mishnah, then it would read as follows: Make His will, capital H, capital W. Make His will your will. In other words, be self-effacing to God. I don't know what that means yet. So that He will make His will your will. Now, you could actually read this as saying, you know, live the proper life and do what God wants and make it second nature to you. And as a result, you'll be rewarded. One way of reading it. And it certainly would fit the second half. Kedeshi vatel ritzon achirim ibnei ritzoncha. You do that, and then God will act to make sure that other people, God will protect you, basically. I find it problematic. I don't like the idea of a quid pro quo vis-a-vis God. We saw, in fact, that already in the third Mishnah that Antignos Ishocho, Antignos of Socho said that don't do mitzvahs because you want a reward, you do it for the sake of God Himself. Maimonides makes a very big point, makes a point of saying that the love of God is not for reward, and fear of God is not fear of punishment, but it's in order to be able to have a dialectical relationship, a relationship with God in which you know your place, but you come as close as possible. That's why you do mitzvahs. You do mitzvahs to have a connection with God. What greater thing could there be? So I'm not sure. So I have a problem with this Mishnah. So I would rather read it as saying that make sure that God and you are on the same page, which one way of looking at this is to say that when you live your life, do it in such a way that godliness is part of every part of your life. And those are considerations. And that's your major consideration. That's the sacred canopy within which you live. You don't nullify yourself. You don't say batel ritzoncha completely, but rather you moderate yourself. You do things in such a way that your overall intention are not just you can have your selfish intentions, your self-concerned intentions. Selfish sounds bad. Your self-concerned intentions. You can also, but at the same time, you should also have higher intentions involved as well. So I'll give you an example, which to me was really kind of stunning. I've mentioned on a number of occasions the commentary of Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, the founder of the first really modern yeshiva, to Pirkei Avot. And on this Mishnah, he says something stunning. He says, "Asei ritzono ki ritzoncha, kedeshi asei ritzoncha ritzono," that always have God's will and your desires in mind at the same time. So, he says, when you divide your time, don't get carried away with your material needs. Rather, make a living, go out and make a living, but make sure that you allocate enough time to service of God so that His will is also fulfilled. There is nothing wrong, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, with going out and doing for yourself. In fact, it's interesting. Here he is, the founder of the Lithuanian yeshivot, all of them, Mir and Slobodka and all these other places, right, with kolim and full-time learning. He says, you have to go out and make a living. It's absolutely critical that you make a living. Your ratzon to make a living, your desire to make a living, your need to make a living, your urge to make a living is a natural and not only legitimate, obligatory desire on your part, which the Torah fully respects. He says, on the contrary, you should not find yourself on the public dole. You should not take money from others. You should be on, stand on your own two feet, make your own living, I mean, however you can do it. And then the rest of your time is for Torah. But don't get carried away by your career and by your need to have more and more money and neglect the things that are really important, God's will. And I have no idea if they teach this in the in the Haredi yeshivot or not. But I rather suspect not. But and don't ask me how they do that. That's I am always amazed at how uncomfortable sources somehow get lost. So the point of this Mishnah, says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, is no. Our will, God's will, there's no contradiction between the two, because God recognizes our needs and we have to recognize God's demands. And if you're all on the same page, then things can work out. By the way, Maimonides had already, this is written in the 19th century, late 18th century, Maimonides had already, in the Mishnah Torah, in the laws of moral conduct, Hilchot Deot, discusses the question of physical pleasure. He says, he's very, very emphatic that we are not an ascetic religion. Yes, there are ascetic trends within Judaism, but he himself was absolutely against it. We are not an ascetic religion. We don't believe in denial. He was very fond of quoting the fact that a Nazirite, we read about him in the Parsha a few weeks ago, that a Nazirite takes a vow to God and he has to abstain from wine and from anything that comes from the grape and so on. And wine symbolizes the world. Wine is what makes man happy and stuff like that. And when his period of 30 days as a Nazir is over, so he has to bring many, many sacrifices, and one of them is a sin offering. Ask Maimonides, what sin offering? What sin did he do? He became this monastic wunderkind. So what happened? So says Maimonides, no, he sinned. In his very desire to be great, to be so spiritual, he sinned. How did he sin? He sinned because he denied himself part of the world. You're not allowed to do that. You shouldn't get, you know, you shouldn't overdo it, but to deny yourself, to afflict yourself, that's not Jewish, said the Rambam. And then he goes on, and he says, and he talks about, it's an amazing chapter, I really highly recommend it, it's available in English too, at the Sepharia site and all kinds of other places. In the second and third chapter of Deot, he goes through it, he says, when you eat, you should eat, and you should eat to be healthy, and you should eat for what you need, but not only for that. You should eat in order to be able to have the strength to serve God properly. And the same thing with sleep, and the same thing with marital relations, and the same thing with drinking, and the same thing, everything. Every single thing in its place. Your ratzon, in the context of our Mishnah, your ratzon is legitimate. But peg it to, and balance it with, God's ratzon, God's will. And that will, in turn, sanctify your will, because you're on the same page as God. We're not a binary people. While we do make the distinction between sacred and profane, profane is it's a Christian word, between sacred and not sacred. Okay, in the Greek world, in the Hellenistic world, in Christianity, the profane is something negative. But we don't. Chol is not. It's going to sound very Rav Kooki, but Rav Kook might be right here. There's sacred, and then there's the neutral, or the not yet sacred, or the less sacred. There's no contradiction between personal needs and God's needs, because God needs us to take care of ourselves, so that we can obey His will. So I think that's another way of looking at this. Another way of looking at this Mishnah, if it's referring to the relations between man and God. Okay, there's more to say in this Mishnah. There's a few more a few more lines here that we have to figure out how they integrate, and we will do that, please God, next week. Hope you have a great week. we're starting the 3 weeks. I'll have more to say about that. Next time. And be well. Again, you're welcome to share this. It'll be up on my YouTube page. It'll be tweeted out. It's on the it's on my Facebook page. It's also on the site of the Rabbi Ariel Constantine's Tel Aviv International Synagogue, who sponsored and got me to start doing these shurim to, and to whom I'm very, very grateful. You're welcome to share, and you're invited to share. And again, if you have questions, please be in touch with me, either in the comments. You can get me on direct messenger. I'd be very happy to discuss issues, including questions or pointed questions where you just don't disagree. It's part of the conversation. Bye, everybody.